Welcome to Ruby Rider's Pegging Paradise podcast number 110 on August 27th, 2015. Changing the world one ass at a time. So for today's podcast, I have another interview for you. I found this man cruising around the internet, and he graciously consented to doing an interview with me. I think you're really going to enjoy this one. Please excuse the recording quality. My voice cuts out occasionally, basically because of the vagaries of Skype. It's a little annoying, but the content is still very understandable. And thankfully, his audio feed was not affected. So, enjoy. So, for our interview today, I have a surprise for all of you. I have a man who has volunteered to interview with me that I'm really excited about. His name is Mark, and I'd like to welcome you to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I found Mark because he had posted a few things online that caught my attention because he's an unusual sort of a guy to find in the pegging world, if you will. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, as much as you'd like to share, Mark?
Sure. Well, I am a United States Marine, so the pegging community doesn't very often overlap with the military, or at least it's not spoken about very often. So that is it's pretty rare whenever you find somebody in this community that also enjoys pegging. I have been pegging for about a year now, or my wife and I have. Mm-hmm. We started off without an actual harness, but I grew to really enjoy it. So we went out, we made the purchase, and really couldn't be happier, honestly.
Nice. So when you say you started without a harness, so you started with just her using a toy with her hand?
Correct. Yeah. We would just use usually a plug, but often we'd use a vibrator.
Uh-huh.
Just more stimulation, felt better.
Mm-hmm. And how did that transition happen? How did you first get interested in anal stimulation?
Honestly, there was no real definitive moment where I thought, oh my goodness, I like this. It was a very slow process.
Uh-huh.
But it was with a previous girlfriend just touching me in the right places and thinking, oh, that feels nice. I'd like more.
Uh-huh. Sure. And so at the time when you made that transition from toy to harness, how was your wife with that? How did she take that suggestion, or whose suggestion was it?
It was my suggestion. I'm very fortunate. She's very supportive. She's not always completely understanding. Sometimes she needs me to kind of clarify things.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I supported a harness, or I'm sorry, whenever I suggested a harness, she questioned whether, you know, I was thinking of a man or something along those lines. And I had to tell her, no, I'm thinking of you. And so the transition was a little difficult at first, but it's been cleared up now, and it works really well. She's very supportive, and it's really great.
Mm-hmm. So the first time that she actually strapped one on and you guys did pegging that way for the first time, how was it different, or what was that like?
So just the positions that you can get into, for instance, you can't do like the cowgirl position, or reverse cowgirl position, I think is what it's called. Mm-hmm. Things like that whenever you don't have an actual harness.
Right.
So it's just just that sort of freedom to try new positions and new things in a way where I can still be touched and I can still be held, things like that. Those things were what was really important to me really noticeable to me whenever we actually started using the harness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed about, you know, the difference between just doing handheld toys and harnesses is just so much more body contact. And certainly leaves the hands free too, which is awesome.
Yeah, one of the best feelings, one of the things that I enjoy the most about the harness is the feeling of her hands on my hips.
Oh,
It's something that you, of course, can't get with. I mean, you can get one hand, but you can't get both whenever you're doing a handheld toy. So just that feeling of sort of submission, you can't really get it as much with just a toy.
Right, being grabbed and sort of taken, if you will.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's so hot. That's amazing. So, let's see here. What kind of equipment do you have?
Right now we just have a very basic harness and dildo. It's not it's I think 5.5 inches. I would like to get a larger one, but we're making sure that we're comfortable the entire time, and we kind of work our way into bigger and better things.
And when you
But
say bigger, you mean longer or wider or both or?
both, definitely both. The one that we have now, I couldn't tell you the exact width or girth, but it's not particularly large, and it's not much different from the vibrators that we'd used in the past. So just a little bit more girth is what I'm looking for, and definitely a little bit longer. I'd say maybe 6.5 to 7 inches.
Yeah, 5.5 inches is very short. I used to say to people who were buying new equipment for the first time that 6 inches was really the minimum that I would recommend.
Right.
But then I had an experience of having a really, really slender guy with practically no butt, and it was perfect for him. It was just right. So there
Ah.
is a place for it, but it has to be your partner. The female side of it, she can't have a lot of extra weight in the stomach, and the guy has to have practically no butt, and then it's awesome. But
Right.
that was the only time that I found that a 5.5 was really just right, and usually a little bit longer just to try and do different positions because the thrusting, it falls out.
Exactly. There's the biggest issue that we had is I do have a butt, so it was not it wasn't easy trying positions like on our sides or
Yeah, hard to get it in
ish.
there, yeah.
Exactly. So it's the length in this instance, definitely it does matter.
So, go back a little bit to when you were mentioning that when you wanted to buy the harness, she was concerned about that you were really looking for a guy. So the other thing you've already shared with me that I'm going to share with our listeners is that you are bisexual. So can you tell me how that happened, how that transition happened? It sounds like the pegging came first, clearly.
So it was actually it wasn't actually first necessarily. So whenever I was growing up, I was growing up in Texas, and it was very, very difficult to be any kind of anything other than heterosexual in Texas. So it was one of those things that I just kept to myself and sort of repressed that
Got it.
as best as I could. And then whenever I got a little bit older and I was more independent and things like that, I did finally come out and say I am bisexual. And this is one of the things that sort of irks me, is because whenever people think of pegging, they think automatically, well, this person has to be gay or they have to be bisexual or something like that. And it doesn't make me uncomfortable, but it makes me a little concerned whenever I tell people that I'm bisexual in relation to pegging, because it's unfortunately sort of furthers that stereotype. But it's definitely one that is untrue. There are many, many men, and some that I actually do know in the military, that are completely straight, have no real interest in men at all, and they enjoy pegging just as much as I do. So it's kind of hard to say which one came first necessarily, but I would say that pegging definitely wasn't a result of being bisexual. It was very much just something that I can enjoy as, as anybody could.
Yeah, it's a part of your body you really enjoy having stimulated.
Right, exactly.
I went through a whole evolution with my blog, where in the beginning, since that is the biggest and most powerful connotation and misconception about pegging, and it always makes me laugh because it's like, oh, he must be gay. And the very first thing I think of whenever people say he must be gay is like, no, look, he's fucking a woman. He's probably eating her pussy. He's not gay. Gay men
Yep.
don't do that. If anything, he might be bisexual, right?
Right.
But he's not, definitely not gay. So, but I hammered away at that. No, he's not gay. He's not gay. He's not gay. And then unfortunately, I realized that I'd left no space for the bisexual men. So I did a whole podcast about it and invited the bi men to write in and just tell me their truth. You tell me their story. I didn't even care whether they were on the down low or whatever. I just wanted to hear how their bisexuality fit into their life right now. And that was just really eye-opening for me. And also, I'm quite sure it was really freeing for a lot of the bisexual guys who maybe were listeners, but just really didn't feel like I was even addressing them. I wasn't
Oh,
holding any space for them. So ever since then, I've been very conscious about that, which is one of the reasons I got really excited when I met you.
well, there's definitely that fear of a sort of snowball effect where it starts with stimulation and then it moves into curiosity about your sexuality. And then so for me, I wouldn't consider myself a cross-dresser necessarily, but I don't shy away from things like wearing panties or
Nice.
skirts or something like that. Well, right now I don't really wear skirts, but I'm interested in it and I'm probably going to. It's kind of difficult when you're in the military because there are rules and regulations and it's kind of difficult to interpret them and make sure that you're doing nothing that are against those regulations.
Got it.
So, whenever you start venturing into that, there's just a whole nother level of uncertainty with your significant other because they start to wonder, well, does my husband or my boyfriend want to be a woman? And it's really, really difficult to overcome sometimes, but it's just one of those things that you have to communicate where no, I don't want to be a woman. Sometimes I may want to feel pretty or something like that. And I would say to anyone, especially your listeners, because this may be one of the larger groups that overlap with the cross-dressing community, it's perfectly okay. There's truly nothing wrong with wanting to express femininity or to just look pretty or really do anything that just betters your self-esteem because in the long run it's going to make your sexual life a lot better.
Yeah, to accept yourself completely. And okay, all you listeners, you're hearing a Marine say this, okay? This is the thing that I love. And because there's so, I've been talking a lot on my podcast lately about men giving each other a hard time, men judging each other
Absolutely.
for anal penetration, stimulation, that kind of thing. Like, the phrase is turning in your man card, stuff like this.
Exactly.
And the more that we've kept that conversation going, and I've had people write in, one of the things that got brought up in the latest part of this ongoing conversation is that there really truly is no gender neutral that's okay. In other words, you are either acting like a man, which is defined by society and has all these, it's in the box. It's all the things that we come to think of as masculine. Or by default, if you're not acting like a man, then you are doing something that's feminine. And it's
Exactly.
not necessarily misogynistic. It's more just that there is no gender neutral allowed for men.
Exactly. This is one of the bigger issues that I have whenever expressing sexuality, actually, is there's a huge double standard whenever it comes to men and women, especially whenever it comes to experimenting for instance, if a woman experiments with another woman, it's very often just looked at as experimenting and just that. And it can turn into more, but it by default, it's just experimenting.
And her boyfriend or husband likes to hear about it.
Right, exactly. And if it's a man experimenting with another man, no, absolutely, he's gay no matter what, and you can't come back from that. That is one of the bigger issues, especially in the Marine Corps. Actually, this may interest you. We didn't do exactly a scientific poll, but it was a poll within the shop that I work in.
Uh-huh.
And the guys were asked, would you rather be the bottom for a woman or pegged,
mm-hmm.
or would you rather be the top for a man?
Wow.
And a lot of them said, I would rather be a top for a man because I'm not gay, which is just...
Oh my gosh.
A little mind-blowing because I don't think they fully understand what that implies.
Well, and that goes right down that whole path of somehow the idea of penetration is connected to a less than thing.
Exactly. It's very much about power, not so much about it's about not submitting more so than what you're actually doing or who you're doing it with.
Right. Well, Charlie Glickman, who co-wrote the book, Ultimate Guide to Prostate Pleasure, he says, you know, if you somehow think that there's a less than thing happening if you allow anal penetration, because it comes out in a variety of different comments like, well, I don't know if she'll look at me the same in the morning, that kind of thing.
Right.
He said, you know, you might want to step back and take a good long look at how you think about women who are penetrated sexually all the time, which I thought was a really interesting way to look at it as well. There's so many different facets in this whole subject.
Exactly. That is one of the biggest issues that I had was the shame that is associated with pegging. And at least initially, I would say that it was probably on my mind for a couple hours a day the very first time.
Wow.
It almost feels like people are watching you, like people are judging you whenever there's absolutely nobody else on the planet besides her that knows that you were pegged the night before.
Right.
So it's but it's very freeing whenever you realize, no, nobody's watching me. Nobody knows. And if they did know, they probably wouldn't care.
Yes. But the shame thing, so I'm interested, when that became more of a factor, was it when you got the harness?
Not really. So I started, one of the bigger issues I had was the panties, actually. Whenever I started wearing panties, that was whenever I really thought, okay, people are judging me. But whenever I would be pegged or whenever we would use toys,
mm-hmm.
the sort of idea was going to work, I'm now less of a man than the people that I'm working with, which of course is silly. And I realized that later. So the shame that came with the harness was more of I was just taken rather than my wife did something to me or for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were just taken, which is something that the vast majority of guys around you couldn't relate to and would look at you as less than for.
Exactly. And it seems odd coming from somebody bisexual to have a fear of being looked at that way, like I was taken. But it's sort of the submission that gets you shamed. It's the submission. You're basically giving in to a woman, which is something that our culture just does not allow for.
Mm-hmm.
And if it were a man, then that's sort of been normalized now. It's not something that people generally fear. But whenever a man thinks a woman is in charge, then there's just this huge confusion and shame. It's just a lot of shame.
Maybe that's why it's so hard for me to date.
Possibly.
Oh, man. You're talking and I'm going, wow, no wonder.
Yeah, it's it's really difficult to distance yourself from that mentality, because once you get it in your head, and it's at a very young age, that you're supposed to be the one that is the dominant person in the bedroom,
yes,
or in a relationship, it's really difficult to be submissive. And whenever my wife and I are, whenever she's pegging me, it's not anything like BDSM. It's not really a sort of dom sub relationship. I'm still very much the dominant one in our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I can just be that and be pegged at the same time. So that's another thing that a lot of guys, I think, sort of get confused, is just because you're being pegged doesn't mean you have to be the submissive one in your relationship, and certainly not the submissive one in your relationship all the time.
Yes, and I'm so glad that you said that, because amongst the people who are not into BDSM as well as the people who are, over and over I get asked that question from the dominant men. Well, how can I do this and still be dominant? And for the guys that are the kinky and do the BDSM, I'm like, okay, come on, get creative. Tie her to the bed, put a blindfold on her, put the harness on her, and ride her, you know?
Exactly.
It'll work.
The gentleman that you talked about that said, think about the woman and, you know, her being taken.
Mm-hmm.
There are several women that are just genuinely the dominant person in the relationship. And if they can be taken and be the dominant one, I think that guys could probably figure it out as well.
That's a really, really good point. One of the things that I have talked with another guy in the military about was the element of vulnerability. Because one of the things he said about military training is that if you're vulnerable, you die. That's basically what you're taught.
Right.
And so you never, ever, ever want to be vulnerable. And so then to purposefully put yourself in a situation where clearly the enemy's not there, but you are purposefully making yourself vulnerable, was something he really struggled with. And one of the things that made it work for him was being tied up was part of it, because he has served and now he's still active military, but he served, he's got PTSD, and he said a lot of guys who were like him have a fear of hurting someone when they react.
Right.
But being tied up, it helped, because he knew he couldn't hurt anybody. And so that allowed him to completely relax. So he found himself in a situation where he was in a controlled situation where he could allow that vulnerability, and the freedom of allowing it just blew his mind and really helped his PTSD quite a bit.
That's awesome. Yeah. So one of the things that I've noticed about pegging is, you're right, you are very vulnerable, and especially emotionally, it's a woman saying anything that is unusual, or if you and your wife have a certain way of talking to one another, if she starts talking down to you while it's happening, it can feel more demeaning than if she were to talk down to you in any other position. I suppose if she says the wrong thing at the wrong time and you're feeling particularly vulnerable, it can really, really hurt the relationship as far as pegging goes and as far as sex goes.
Wow.
I can say honestly that I would rather be in a physically vulnerable state than an emotionally vulnerable state. And that's sort of something that I think also comes with our culture.
Yeah.
But just for instance, if my wife were to say, call me a woman or something whenever we were pegging, that could be something that would sort of turn me off immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Or if she were to say something, anything really negative, you know, there's a lot of people that enjoy calling people a slut or anything negative whenever they're having sex.
Mm-hmm.
And anything like that could potentially just turn me off immediately. So, and it's that vulnerable state that does it.
Yeah. And the emotionally open space comes from the physically open space. Well, let me ask you this then, because one of the things that I teach about is the similarities between the G-spot and the prostate. And there's a well-known thing that happens with a certain percentage of women where stimulation of the G-spot can really bring out a lot of emotions, a lot of tears even. And the reason I even researched it was because it happened to me. So when I'm teaching, I'll ask the women in the room, you know, how many of you have ever had an emotional reaction to G-spot stimulation? And about a third of the women usually will raise their hand. And I found out kind of inadvertently from reading different threads and researching and being all over the internet that this is also something that can happen with the prostate. Men don't talk about it a lot for obvious reasons because of all the stuff we've just been talking about society not really allowing men to be vulnerable and emotional, much less have tears. So one of the things I teach in my classes, if this happens, that it's so important that you handle it well because you are literally have someone in there most vulnerable and open that they could possibly be practically. So you have to respond well and take care of them. Is this something that's ever happened to you?
I've never associated it with the stimulation necessarily, but being in that vulnerable state and the shame that comes with it, maybe even more so because I'm in the military, I'm not really sure. Mm-hmm. Just a combination of those things, it has led me to cry after being pegged. And It wasn't so much about the shame as it was there came a point where I didn't feel any shame, and it was very confusing for me. And I thought maybe I was now less of a man because I wasn't feeling shame anymore. And wow. I thought I should feel shame because this is something that's shameful.
Wow.
And then, yeah, it was really difficult. And then my wife was nice enough to sort of just cling to me and say, "Do you want to stop?" And I said, "No, I don't."
Mm-hmm.
And she just told me again and again, you know, you're not less of a man. You provide for me. You do all of these things for me. And it was very reassuring knowing that there's no one act that I can do in my bedroom that makes me less of a man. And there's no one sexual position that makes me less of a man. What makes you a man is taking care of what you have to take care of. And it's different for everybody, but what's not different for everybody is it's not reduced. Your manhood isn't reduced by letting a woman take control. And in fact, I would argue that it makes you more of a man because you can be more comfortable in that position than I would say most men, especially in Western culture and American culture.
I argue that as well, that it takes more strength to open that part of yourself up and be vulnerable, because so often vulnerability is conflated with weakness.
Right.
And that's such a misconception. I mean, Brené Brown has done a couple of TED Talks about that, and she speaks about it so well. But what you describe with your wife is so beautiful. That's exactly what I would have wished for any man going through that, is to have someone be supportive. And what I guess I didn't get the intensity of, the depth of, is how much shame there can be and how difficult that can be to work through.
Yeah, it's really, really helpful having a wife that is supportive. She, I remember the first time that I told her that I wanted to be pegged. It was whenever we were walking from my old apartment before I joined the military, from my old apartment to the store.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on our way, and I said, "Well, what's a sexual fantasy that you have that, you know, you've either never told anyone or that you want to try with me one day?" And she said that she didn't really have one.
Mm-hmm.
And then she asked me, and I thought, well, it's now or never. I'm either going to admit it or not. And I said, "I want to be done with a strap on."
Mm-hmm.
And the look she gave me at for just a second, it was kind of sheer confusion. But then the question she asked was, "Really, why?" And just the fact that she didn't say that's weird or
judge it right off. Yeah,
exactly. She didn't write it off. She didn't think I was odd. She just wanted to know why.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the most helpful thing.
Yeah. And then as time went on, how much time elapsed between when you started doing like anal play and then finally the harness happened?
It was a very long time. It was probably about a year and a half before we actually got the harness, since we did regular anal simulation.
And where in there did the panties happen, or was that happening all along?
So that's kind of funny.
I'm just curious.
Oh no, that's okay. Whenever I was probably 8 or 9, I remember I used to see the things that women wore, and I thought, oh, that's really pretty. I want to wear something like that.
Yeah.
And I remember my sister would leave her bikini out sometimes, and I would try it on. And
that's
then,
awesome.
Yeah. One day I saw myself in the mirror, and I thought, oh, goodness, I'm disgusting. Why? You know, I thought, oh, my God, you're fat. You're weird. It was really hard. So I forced myself not to think about any sort of women's clothing or underwear or anything like that for a really long time. And then
was it because you didn't fit into like the typical society's standards of feminine beauty?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes. And it was really, really difficult to just move past that notion that I wasn't really skinny and I wasn't petite. I was very much a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I later came to accept that I don't have to be what, you know, we consider pretty. I just want to feel pretty. And so the panties happened probably about 6 months ago now.
Mm-hmm. Recent,
around then. 6 months ago. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty recent. And I started doing other things. Like I tried like making my nails look all nice and stuff, like sort of like a pedicure kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And just really little things. And it's great. I feel pretty. Like I feel clean, stuff like that.
Sweet.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. It didn't really correlate to the pegging necessarily, but I loved it whenever my wife would, during dirty talk, if she would say something about how sexy I looked in my panties or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that I have had experience in talking with a different guy that I know that a lot of my readers are familiar with is Zach, who is, we've written a lot of stories together. He's actually a cop, and he is also ex-military. And he told me he loves wearing panties, and if he could get away with it, he'd wear them every single day. He said, but you know, you get shot, probably not a good idea.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult being in the military and wearing panties, because there's just always that chance that, you know, you have to change over right now to go do something. And it's
other guys around.
Exactly. And There are always ways that you can sort of get around it. And I'm lucky enough to be in a place where it doesn't really matter, because we don't have to have that sense of urgency, really.
Uh-huh.
So for me, I wear panties every day. I can't remember the last time I wore boxers. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's...
Okay, can I get really specific and ask what color you like?
My favorite ones are my purple ones. They're, uh-huh. I have like my pretty like lingerie stuff, and then I have sort of just functional panties.
Mm-hmm.
The functional ones are for whenever I'm wearing, you know, my camis, or whenever I'm just out and about. But whenever I just want to feel sexy, I put on my lingerie. My mm-hmm. favorite ones, yeah, probably my purple. They're sort of purple and lacy, and they have some bows on them, stuff like that.
Bows. This is such a common theme. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. And right now I'm wearing a pinkish thong, and my wife makes fun of me, and not because I'm wearing a thong as a man, but just because I'm wearing a thong. She says that they're uncomfortable and that I'm weird for liking them, but she doesn't care about the panties. She just thinks that I'm weird for liking thongs.
Yeah, I can kind of relate to that a little bit, but I've heard another man, ex-military, he said, you girls are so lucky you get that nice little thin strap of fabric rubbing against your ass all the time. And then, you know, that's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, I can honestly say I have two thongs and I love both of them. And I honestly would wear thongs almost all the time. I love bikini cut, but I'm a sucker for thongs.
You know, recently I just had at my house, I had a clothes swap. And for anybody who's listening that doesn't know what a clothes swap is, most of the time only women have clothes swaps because men just don't do this. And you bring all the clothes that you don't want anymore, you don't wear anymore, they're still in good condition, put them all in a room together and take the stuff you like and the rest gets given away. So what it really looks like visually is a bunch of women in their underwear trying clothes on, right?
Right.
And every time I say that, guys go, man, I wish I could be a fly on the wall, right? So for the very first time, I experimented because, you know, I'm in the sex education world. I have a lot of different friends. I'm also in the BDSM community. And so much is so allowed with that community. That's one of the things I love about it. We're also allowing. Everybody's different and it's all okay. So I thought, okay, for once, I'm going to do a clothes swap and it's going to be all gender inclusive, right? So, and then I started to put, you know, how labels really, labels help us out to begin to describe us. But then really you just need to start asking questions because labels really only tell you so much.
Right.
So rather than doing a whole bunch of labels, I decided to say it was all gender inclusive. And basically the only requirement to attend was that you like to wear women's clothes. So then I found myself having to hold some boundaries because what I didn't want was the feeling of creepers, right?
Right, exactly.
I didn't want guys to just come and sit and watch women try clothes on. That's not okay. If you're a guy and you're there or you identify as male, then you have to be trying things on. And it worked out so well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was thrilled. We had some cross-dressers. The trans people, trans women that I invited, they weren't able to make it, but that's the direction that I want to move towards.
Right.
And the cross-dressing guy who came, he came dressed up, fully dressed up, like to pass as a woman. And he said, oh my gosh, it was so nice to spend so much time in that feminine space with all of you.
Oh yeah, it's whenever I'm sort of just in the mood and I just want to feel pretty or attractive or whatever. Girl time is really nice. I really
girl
like girl time.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
It's, I have always identified as a man. I've never been particularly interested in fully cross dressing.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's just never been my thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a friend back in Texas, and whenever I go back, we're scheduling a sort of girls' day where we go and we get manicures and pedicures and stuff like that. And I promised her that I would wear a skirt. And yeah, it's going to be fun. And it's one of those things where it very well could be the first time I wear a skirt out in public and stuff. And it's something that generally gets a lot of confused and angry looks, but it's actually kind of in popular culture. It's actually sort of making this weird shift into the limelight where guys is actually cool to wear a skirt, or it's sort of a hipster fashion. So
yes, it is. I mean, certainly the kilts have been around for a while, but they're morphing a little bit, and I think the whole range of what is becoming a little more accepted is not just the kilts anymore, which
exactly.
is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, I love the idea of having just freedom from my waist down. It's the idea is great. It seems like if I was controlling gender norms, I probably would just make skirts the normal thing.
I think they will be eventually. I'm hoping. You know, it is moving towards that. And of course, you know, out here in California, this is what I see. You know, I have no idea what it's like in the Midwest, and I'm sure they're far behind us in terms of accepting things that are different.
Oh, yeah.
But it sure is nice to be out here with all of the things changing that are changing.
Exactly. Yeah, I if I can, I'll probably go up north and hang out with some friends up there, and that's more likely where I would feel free to dress however I want, because there's not a military presence up there, so there's not really a chance of getting in trouble or anything. I don't particularly care about being seen. I just care about getting in trouble, because it's very likely.
You've reached the end of part one of the interview with Mark the Marine. I listened to this podcast a number of times and tried to figure out how I could fit it all into one, but there is so much good stuff in here that I didn't want you to miss any of it. So click on over to part two and enjoy.